I'm Amanda, compulsive reader and food addict. I just told her, I said, this thing might hear my heart beating. Like, I'm like feeling like really anxious this morning. Step 12, I'm going to dive right in. Step 12 says, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to compulsive overeaters and to practice these principles in all our affairs. So as Jean mentioned, the spiritual principle of step 12 is service. But it's not only the spiritual principle, it is also a tool. So obviously we know service is important. But it seems to be a big task to be able to speak on a step that also references the theme of this weekend of practicing these principles in all our affairs. It was an honor to be asked, and I will do my best. And I feel like every other speaker set the bar very high. But first, I will go on to qualify for a few minutes to let you know where I came from. I'm pretty sure I was born a compulsive overeater. From the minute my mom birthed me, I had an insatiable appetite. By a couple months old, she was telling the doctor, she's never full. I was getting rice cereal out of my bottle by the time I was 2 months old, tip of the nipple cut so it could get out, and I was just like, give me it all. But my first food memory, I was about 3 years old, and it was the obsession that I already remember. We had frozen fudge in our freezer, and my mom was about to get in the shower, and I was formulating a plan. I was like, I need to get some of this fudge while my mom's in the shower, put it back, you know, I mean, and I was three. And my plan backfired because as I was cutting the fudge, I mean, I remember getting the saran wrap off and like, I remember it vividly. And then I cut my finger when I was cutting the fudge with a butter knife. So then I was like busted. So not only did I have my first experience with the obsession, I had my first experience with shame. And so it started from there. I can never say, oh, I kept the weight off as a child or a teenager. The weight came on, it never came off, ever. I had a few weight loss attempts. I went to Weight Watchers with my mom when I was 8, with the doctor's approval. Went to Weight Watchers again, I think, when I was about 18. But I was never one who tried a bunch of stuff before coming to OA. So I made a note. I don't really have to spend a lot of time in the middle part of my story because we all know the insanity that brought us here. Like, I definitely didn't, you know, fly in on the wings of victory into OA and just say, like, you know. But I came to OA in 2003. I was 23 years old. Fairly young for the demographic in the room at that time, but I spent about 16 years after that trying to prove that half measures could avail me something. And I was 100% confident that I would be happy with half results. I would be fine with that, but that's just not how it works, and our literature tells us that a lot. So for those 16 years, I had many relapses, too many that I can't even tell you exactly how many relapses. I'd have like a year of abstinence, 6 months of relapse, 9 months of abstinence, 8 months of relapse. So it was like less abstinence, more relapse. So I spent those 16 years, we heard someone say like, it was sprinkled with a little bit of abstinence, but I never found recovery. I had bits and pieces of relief. That's all I was finding. I came in originally at 329 pounds, but ultimately I hit my high weight of 409 during one of those relapses. And not only did I hit 400 pounds once, I hit it twice. And those were all within those 16 years of being in these rooms. And if you have a hard time envisioning what 409 pounds looks like, I will show you some pictures when we are done. That's half my body. I'm half my body weight now. So one of the things that even my mental obsession manifested as, I wanted gastric bypass. I went through the whole process, got approved, everything, insurance was cleared. The doctor said you need to lose 20 pounds to prove that this is what you want. And I gained 20. Why? Because I'm a compulsive overeater and I have the mental obsession. So for me, I did not have that surgery because at that point, this was I think 2012, I had enough OA in my mind to know that having a smaller stomach was not going to stop what was going on in my head. So ultimately in 2017, I threw my hands up in the air. I was in relapse again. Slips of self-will. That's what my slips were. Self-will every single time. Threw my hands up in the air and said, I'm done with OA. I said, I am that person who is constitutionally incapable of being honest, and I'm done. I'm done. I can't do this. And so that was for the first time in 2017 till the beginning of 2020 that I did not attend a meeting. I did not pick up literature. I did not do anything OA related because I was like, I'm done. I can't. So in January of 2020, a couple months pre-pandemic, as we all remember, I was about 350 pounds. So again, my addict mind was like, you're not at your physical lowest. Like, you're not that bad. Like, you know, but I mean, I definitely was no healthy person at 350 pounds. But I was physically, emotionally, and spiritually bankrupt. The worst I had ever been. So how did people show me service in the beginning of 2020? Meetings were still there. I did phone meetings. Because I could call in and none of you knew I was on a phone, except for the moderator. They maybe knew. But otherwise, I could hide because it took me months to say, I cannot fail again because I was not turning my will over quite yet. And during that time, I shouldn't say during that time, since then, I realized in those 16 years, I was skipping steps. And the biggest step that I skipped was number three. Because I was not fully turning my life over to God. I would say, you can have this part, but I'm still gonna control all of this and I'll do it okay. But I don't. I do a shitty job at this part and he does a great job at this part. So it took me a little time finding my way back. For several months, like I said, I was doing phone meetings so I could still be like in the outskirts. But people started to love me until I could love myself again. Sponsors were available, and they told me they were, even when I wasn't willing to work with them. People took my calls, and they listened, and God was waiting in the wings for me to find the willingness to surrender. So that service from others is what helped me crawl back into the solution that I was avoiding. My abstinence currently, back-to-back, is from May 5th of 2020. So. On to what we are talking about. So like I said, step 12, going back to step 12, it seems like we should be at the end of the road, that we made it. We've arrived. We're at step 12. We're in our senior year. Like, we are ready. Like, you know, really, where do we go from here? Like, this should be the easiest step, you know, like maybe the layup. Like, this is going to be simple. But unfortunately, this is the step that starts to make our program really sustainable, at least in my experience. So step 12 is the only step in the big book that has its entire chapter devoted just to step 12. So chapter 7, working with others, is only on step 12. Also, in the OA 12 and 12, or no, in the AA 12 and 12, it's the longest step or tradition, being 19 pages long. So, needless to say, fitting all of this into 20 minutes is a lot of work. So, in the chapter Working with Others, I want to read a passage on page 97. And it says, helping others is a foundation stone of your recovery. A kindly act once in a while isn't enough. You have to act the Good Samaritan every day if need be. It may mean the loss of a night's sleep, great interference with your pleasures, interruptions to your business. It may mean sharing your money or your home, counseling frantic wives and relatives, innumerable trips to police courts, sanitariums, hospitals, jails, and asylums. Your telephone may jangle at any time of the day or night. Your wife may sometimes say she is neglected. A drunk may smash the furniture in your home or burn a mattress. You may have to fight with him if he is violent. Sometimes you will have to call a doctor and administer sedatives under his direction. Another time you may have to send for the police or an ambulance. Occasionally you will have to meet such conditions. Holy crap. Like, I have to do all of that, you know, like, but no, we don't have to do that. But for me personally, reading that passage, I think this is what the measures were that our AA fellows who started all of this for us were willing to go to help that next person recover. Personally, I feel I have it pretty easy. Like, sure, my phone might still jangle in the middle of the night, but none of you have burned a mattress in my home. Like, you know, it hasn't happened yet. So, you know, I think I have it pretty easy. But, I'm watching you, Jane. But think about if we worked our program with the same willingness to do anything, literally almost anything, to help someone get sober. Like Steps 12 says, we tried to carry this message. I believe it says try because we won't always be successful. Our words will fall on deaf ears from time to time. Our actions will be overlooked or maybe even ignored. But that's okay. We can't save the world, but maybe we can save one. And if nothing else, we're saving ourselves from returning to the food. Thank you. So like, what are some things we can do for service? Things that maybe aren't quite as drastic as they talk about in there. For me, first thing, as a newcomer, go to meetings. That is the biggest service. And some people don't truly believe that that's a big service, but I have another passage for you from the AA 12 and 12 that says, we sit in AA or OA meetings and listen not only to receive something ourselves, but to give the reassurance and support which our presence can bring. If our turn comes to speak at a meeting, we again try to carry AA's message. Whether our audience is one or many, it is still 12th step work. So get to that meeting, you know, go to that meeting, show that next person. We heard someone last night say, if you've only been to that meeting once, you have one more week and experience that that other person doesn't have. So then, like the reading said, share your story. Don't fear to share your story. You can't get it wrong. It's your story. Like, no one can judge you because it's your story. And, you know, I mean, unless you choose to tell lies, like, it's your story. But also on page 106 in the OA 12 and 12, and I believe it says this in other AA literature, those of us who live this program don't simply carry the message, we are the message. You know, and sometimes our story is just people watching our actions. You know, my kids see the difference in my personality. My kids make amends to me because, you know, they see how we don't have to live in that same way. So I was once told, like, you work your program as a yes ma'am program. So what if we worked our program like a yes ma'am program? Anything I get asked, I say yes ma'am. And I will put a disclaimer in there. My sponsor makes me put boundaries around my service because some of my relapses were from overcommitment, and I would be all or nothing. I would get overwhelmed, and then instead of speak up, I would just leave. And then I would leave you all hanging. You'd all have to take whatever I was doing, and that was my MO. But some of the things, like years ago, it started. Amanda, can you come early to the meeting and set up chairs? Yes, ma'am. Can you come and set up the tea or coffee? Yes, ma'am. Can you read this reading at the meeting, or could you lead this meeting? Yes, ma'am. Can you be the speaker? Yes, ma'am. Can you talk at a convention or retreat? Yes, ma'am. Can you be an intergroup rep? Can you be an intergroup board member? Can you chair a retreat? Which I did 2 years ago and now got rigged into doing it again. but yes, ma'am. Yep. Can you be on a committee? Yes, ma'am. It can be easy stuff. And obviously we can't do all of this at one time. And we need to put boundaries around our service work just the same as we do our food. But what if you worked your program with the mentality, believing that everything you are being asked to do is God's plan for you? How would your life be different if you put your Step 12 work in your higher power's hands, just like you do your food? I promise you, he will guide you to the perfect balance that will work for you. I promise it will level up your recovery. It has in my experience. And our tool of service even starts with the sentence, any form of service, no matter how small, that helps reach a fellow sufferer, adds to the quality of your own recovery. It's not just my promise, it's a personal experience that always says it will do it. So, but working, practicing these principles in all our affairs, how does service look outside of OA? I practiced this last night and it It took me 15 minutes. I knew I was going to run out of time. practicing these principles in all our affairs. Again, practicing. We are not perfect. We just have to practice. We have to be willing. Working the steps, we are of service to ourselves because we begin to grow into the person our higher power wants us to be. What this means is, for me, I put my recovery first. There's a couple lines on page 337 in the big book that are some of my favorite. And it says, you said, as long as I put AA first in my life, everything that I put second would become first class. Gets me teary. But what does this mean to me? To me, that means that if I learn the skills in these rooms, I can extend it to the outside world, including my closest family, my friends, community members that might be strangers, and I'll only see them once. But it gives me new perspective and a new willingness and desire to help others. But how can we present this service to our family? Abstinence. Abstinence is the greatest service we can give anyone because that's where it starts, right there. We work our program. We work the steps. We use the tools. We are a little happier and maybe a little saner than our families know us to be. By working the steps, we find we can be more kind, loving, and patient. We love these people for who they are in the moment, which once we love ourselves unconditionally, we are more capable of loving others the same way. Show them grace because I can show them grace because I can show myself grace. How about more tangible things like cleaning the table and doing the dishes while they enjoy dessert? We can do that kind of stuff. We don't have to sit there and torture ourselves if that's something that still bothers you. But we get to show up for them. We get to say what we mean, and we get to be there when we say we will. And we get to let them grow. We get to let them be their own hero and find their own way. But how about my work or coworkers? Thank you. Okay, thanks. For work or coworkers, we don't maybe partake in the gossip. We don't get caught up and keep our nose out of things. We have patience when someone needs us to show them the same thing for the third or fourth or fifth time, because God knows I have been in that situation and I want someone to show me that patience. Maybe we make sure we start on time, we get our work done, we meet deadlines, we don't waste company resources. All of these things are service that I'm not able to give when I'm in the food, you know? But how about general society and strangers? I think of how I used to... It's getting so hot here. How did I used to treat strangers? Horribly. You know, I mean, my family obviously took the brunt of it, but strangers, I didn't care. I was never going to see them again, hopefully. But today, you know, showing patience to the young cashier or maybe someone in training that's not moving at the pace that I want them to be. You know, I mean, I used to get so short and snippy with them. Like, you don't have to do that. They don't deserve that. But again, having grace for that wait staff that you see are short-staffed and didn't remember to bring my beverage refill, or maybe they took too long to take our order, that's okay. I mean, we'll still get our food. We'll be all right. We haven't withered away yet. Or how about those situations where the older gentleman stops you, maybe at the bank, and you just let him finish his story because maybe you're the only person he's going to talk to that day. It's patience. But how about I show each stranger the same love, tolerance, patience, and kindness that I would show each one of you? If I treat everyone in this world like they're my fellow, I'm pretty lucky. You know, who knows? Who knows who I'll run into? But all of these service acts, you know, they all come back to program. I can't be of service in these aspects if I am not abstinent. I mean, I used to be so quick to anger. I would be so impatient with my kids. You know, I'm teaching my 15-year-old how to drive right now. and he's my second teenager that I've taught now in these last 4 years of recovery. And to think of the patience I have, like, I used to yell at them for the stupidest things. Like, I can't imagine the tension I would cause them in a car. You know, it's... But yeah, it all starts with this, with our program. By working the steps, using the tools, we learn new behaviors and how we can deal with life in a healthy way. Maybe I am doing okay on time. I'm going to start wrapping up with a few excerpts that I wanted to read, just short ones. One is from page 100 in the OA 12 and 12. And it says the 12th step invites us to continue the journey one day at a time for the rest of our lives. We need to keep moving forward in recovery, keep developing our spiritual consciousness if we are to remain spiritually awake and fully alive. It says it right there. We have to work this step. If we want to continue to keep what we've been given, we have to give it away. And then on page 492 in the big book, it says, I felt better by getting out of myself and helping someone. It has also helped to learn how to laugh at myself and to not take myself so seriously. I am aware that I am not the only person on the earth with problems. And then on the bottom of page 493, it says, the tools of sobriety and recovery in AA are there for me to use in all aspects of my life. And all I ever need is a willingness to do what is in front of me. Again, if you're asked, do it, you know, like, and no task is too small. So I have like notes everywhere here. So I also wrote something on my phone. This was the first thing that I wrote about speaking. So I said, point being of all of this, we can't keep what we've been given unless we're willing to give it away. If your program is struggling, or maybe you feel like something's missing right now, I challenge you to ask yourself, what am I doing for service? Am I getting to meetings early to help set up and connect with people? Am I volunteering on a committee? Maybe join the Buffalo Retreat Committee next year. I wrote that sentence before last night, so just to let you know. Or how about help out with the Unity Intergroup Convention Planning Committee? You know, and I want to put a plug in too. Like, you know, we heard last night, you know, the chair needs a year of abstinence. The committee chairs need 90 days. You don't need any abstinence to help out. Like, you can still be a member of this committee. Like, you can help out no matter what. And all are welcome. No committee is ever too big, you know, and I think I said this, so I'll stop for a second. As we heard a few times this weekend, there is no them. We are a we program, and we all need to be of service. Get involved as little or as much as you're feeling called to do, but don't ignore those nudges. Don't wait to be asked, just do. I think we heard that sentence this weekend too. And you will make lifelong friends in the meantime. So now I'm gonna ad lib again for a second, and I wanna say, like, the person who's chairing the convention next year, out of the blue, October 27th of 2020, I got a text message saying, hey, this is so-and-so. I am new to OA, never been here. Tell me what I can do. Do you have a sponsor opening? Whatever. I thank God at that time I did not have a sponsor opening. I responded and said, I have 3 sponsees right now. I don't have an opening, but I can help you get started. I was willing. I was willing to help that person. I said, do you want to commit your food? There's a meeting. It was a Tuesday morning. I said, there's a meeting right now. Here's the number. Zoom link, password. I was willing. I was willing to be of service to this person because she was suffering, right? And I thank God that I did not have a sponsee opening. Now I'm going to cry. Because she is my best friend in this entire world today. She was just in my wedding in November. And you never know. You never know where your service will lead you or those friends that you're going to make. Okay. I hate crying, and this place always does it to me. Every time. Every time. Okay. Or maybe it's time to expand your service above the meeting level. Maybe try being an intergroup rep, meeting more people, and learning about the inner workings of OA. Or step it up to a region rep. Or work your way up to the qualifications of a world service rep. But most importantly, ask yourself, am I giving away what I have been given? Am I a sponsor? Do I actually have sponsees? Am I sharing my story at or on meetings or even on the phone calls with those new members or members who are struggling? Even one day of abstinence is more than the person who is still in the food, and they need your experience, strength, and hope. When we stop sharing our story, we start to forget where we came from. And when we do that, we are just slowly working our way back to the food. So get involved. I promise you, you and your program won't regret it. And remember, don't leave before the miracle happens, and don't leave once the miracle happens. I'll pass.